The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas, for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
This episode was brought to you by Signos. As I continue on my health journey this year, I really wanted to implement a glucose monitor into my routine. The one I kept hearing about was Signos. You might ask me, why do I want a glucose monitor? I really wanted to check in real time when I was spiking my blood sugar levels, whether it was I'm eating too many sweets, I'm drinking too much. Why do you need a glucose monitor? The CDC estimates that approximately 96 million American adults, that's more than one in three, have prediabetes. Of those with prediabetes, more than 80% don't know they have it. What's great about Signos is they have this unique CGM, continuous glucose monitor, with an AI-driven app to deliver real-time glucose monitoring for optimal health and weight management. A healthy weight allows insulin to work more efficiently and can help keep blood sugars within a normal range. With Signos, you can literally see which foods cause your blood sugar to spike above reasonable levels and get real-time alerts. And let me tell you guys, it is real. You will be surprised what spikes your blood sugar and what doesn't spike your blood sugar. And all that guessing, you don't have to do that anymore. Since I started using Signos, my life honestly has just gotten easier. I can make informed decisions about what I'm putting in my body. Okay, Signos removes all the guesswork out of weight loss and provided me with the tools and knowledge I needed to develop really healthier habits. It combines my glucose data from CGM or continuous glucose monitor with an AI-driven app to deliver me real-time glucose insights for optimum health and weight management. Right now, Signos has an offer exclusively for our listeners. Go to Signos.com, that's Signos.com. You guys can get up to 20% off selected plans by using code LIPSTICK today. That's Signos.com, Signos.com. Use code LIPSTICK to get 20% off select plans for you today.
Hey, I'm Molly Sims.
And I'm Amisha Gormley. We're two girls obsessed with one thing,
beauty. And by that, we mean everything that makes you look
and feel
beautiful.
We're calling on our favorite health experts, industry insiders, and friends to answer all your beauty questions.
With a drink in hand.
Definitely with a drink in hand.
You're listening to Lipstick on the Rim with Molly Sims.
Guess what I just did?
Do tell.
I got a colonoscopy.
Oh, that's not what I expected you to say.
Oh, exactly. You didn't think I was going to say that. Not only did I get a colonoscopy, I did my second colonoscopy, and I got one from our very amazing guest today, Dr. Ari Nguyen, who is my amazing gastroenterologist, and here's a little known fact, all right? He happens to be married to my favorite dermatologist, so we're keeping it all in the family. He takes care of my stomach. Takes care of all of this.
She takes care of your
she
face.
She takes care of my face. We were actually just talking. He's like, Ari was like, I don't do befores and afters. Like, I was just showing him Dr. B's work. I'm like, look at this before and after. All right. I thought we could do an episode on debunking all the gastric issues, what they are, how do we know if we have them, what we should overcome. And I feel like everyone has some type of stomach problems now, stomach issues, and they're hard to identify. And also, when do you start getting a colonoscopy? Like, when do you start doing things? Dr. Ari Nguyen, he is amazing. His bio is pretty incredible, and he's super handsome.
Oh, thank you.
He's at the Center GI Health. Like, I have to say the one thing about you that I love so much, because I hate going to doctors, he knows this, is that you're so good. You're so good with crazy people like me, calming them down.
Well, I wouldn't quite call you crazy, but thank you for saying that.
You are. You have, like, I was so nervous to get, we're going to talk about that, but I was really nervous to get the colonoscopy, and I'm like, I can't have cancer, and the anesthesiologist, and I have to wake up because I have three children.
Yeah.
All right, let's start broad. Can you first explain to our listeners what you do as a gastroenterologist?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me on. So gastroenterology is the study of the treatment of digestive disease conditions, and it is a subspecialty of internal medicine. So we do 3 years of internal medicine, and then 3 years of GI subspecialty, and we treat anything from mouth to anus. Prevention.
So you're an ass man?
You're an ass man.
We're the entire digestive tract. People like to focus on that part, but we go top to bottom. It's about 30 feet of intestine and digestive tract that we treat, and there's a lot of disease prevention in there as well.
And so, because there's a lot of talk. I mean, there's a lot of talk about gut. I mean, Imogen.
It's a hot button.
It's a hot topic.
Do you know why
it's become such a hot topic?
Well, I think in years past, when you would see, you know, commercials and hear things about health, it'd be all the American Heart Society Association and things like that. The gut is, you know, a big, big part of the immune system. About 40 to 50% of the body's immune system is in there. We're learning a ton about gut biome, which we'll talk about. And rightfully so, I think it's a hot button topic right now.
I know. It's crazy. Okay, so right before my colonoscopy, I don't normally text him if it's only like an emergency, but I thought I had food. Well, you know, I had to cancel. I thought I had food poisoning. By the way, she did have food poisoning that day.
Yeah.
That I canceled.
Yeah.
I did not.
I vomited in the middle of the night too, randomly on separate coasts.
I did not. I had the other way and it did not stop for 3 days. I mean, like, but I called him. I'm like, I think I have food poisoning. He's like, okay, tell me. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, my stomach is spasming. I'm rolling. I'm like, I have the worst stomach. I'm really cold. He was like, I don't think you have food poisoning. He's like, I think you have the stomach flu. Okay. So that was fun. Okay. Say someone has a stomach ache, really sometimes bloated from time to time. They get heartburn. Where do you start as a doctor in addressing and trying to figure out what that is?
Yeah. I think the most important thing is just starting to listen to the story. And as a patient, I think it's really important to be as specific as possible. I think all too often people come in and they describe a diagnosis like they have heartburn or they have constipation. But what's important to me is, what do you mean by that? Different people will mean different things when they say that. Where does it hurt? When did it start? Is it constant? Is it intermittent? And there's questions that we'll ask to kind of walk you through and get that data. And always what we're trying to evaluate as doctors is, what's the severity? Is this something we need to jump on today? Or is this a long-term issue that's going to take a little bit of time to unravel? Trying to figure out if it's something emergency or something urgent or not. So as many details as we can get is important.
I think that this generation, particularly our generation, is probably the first that really started to cut a lot of things out, where it's a lot more people that are gluten-free, that are dairy-free, that may not have an allergy, but they've just chosen to live that lifestyle. Have you seen there be any correlation then that they develop an allergy or that they have allergies? Like, I'll give you an example. I don't eat as much gluten anymore. Not intentionally. I just don't. But if I eat like a bagel because I just craved it one day with lox and Molly wants to like throw up when she's around me. But I will feel so sick after. And I remember asking my doctor to test me if I had celiacs. So I was like, I don't understand why I can't tolerate the gluten so much anymore. And she was like, you're not celiacs. I tested you. So
I wanted to be.
Like, dang it. But are you seeing any of that play out in your practice at all with these sort of trends that have sort of taken place?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sometimes I'm shocked at how people can avoid as many things as they can avoid. There's like sometimes like nothing left. But definitely, I think partly it's a credit to our generation as well, where we're listening to our bodies a little bit more. Whereas before, I think these things existed, but we just sort of like powered through them. A lot of these things are intolerances where a test, for example, you brought up the example of celiac disease. We have blood work, we have biopsies that can tell you if you have full-blown celiac disease, but we really don't have good tests to tell you if you're intolerant. There's a lot of trial and error there. And as we're becoming more knowledgeable about what things can cause inflammation, what things can upset the GI tract.
And what are those things? What causes inflammation?
You know, it's tough to answer that in general because it's different for every person. Right. So when you see half of LA gluten-free, that doesn't mean everybody is, but right. You know, but for some people, that's really going to bother. For some people, it's dairy. For some people, it's gluten. For everybody, I would argue, it's processed foods. It's diets that are high in red meat, high fat, low fiber, things of that nature. But everybody has their own triggers. And when I see a patient in the office with GI symptoms that I think is potentially diet-related, I'll take them through the most common things, some of which we listed, and try elimination diets and try excluding things to see if they get better.
And sometimes they do.
Sometimes they do. And sadly, sometimes they don't. And we go down a different path. But right. If we can try to manage as many things, if the situation allows for it, with diet modification, as opposed to, here, take this pill, certainly we try that.
There's a lot of bloating pills out there. Good old charcoal. Mm-hmm. Charcoal works, right? Does charcoal work?
Again, it depends. No. If it were that easy, my life would be a lot simpler. Bloating is perhaps the most common thing I see in the office and maybe one of the toughest things to treat because it's so multifactorial. The very first thing I tell a patient when they tell me that they're bloated is A, describing what they mean. Some people mean they look 9 months pregnant. Some people mean that, you know, they're feeling more gassy. But the most important thing is to treat it multifactorial, like a pie chart. What percentage of their symptoms are attributable to, for example, sugar-free substitutes or carbonated drinks? And what percentage of that pie chart has potentially a medical condition like celiac or irritable bowel syndrome or SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth? So going at it in one modality often doesn't work. So right. Charcoal might do the trick, but you probably need charcoal, diet modification, right. And make sure there's no other diseases there to have success.
True. In terms of gut health, how do you feel about probiotics? Do you think it's worthy of taking them?
Yeah, it depends on the condition. For a normal, healthy gut that has no symptoms, probably probiotics aren't going to help a lot.
Okay.
There are certain conditions, like taking them with antibiotics or for someone who has diarrhea, that having a broad array, live, broad spectrum probiotic might help. But one of the things is you got to consider we have about 40 trillion different organisms in our intestinal tract, and introducing maybe 10 of those via a probiotic will not be a magic bullet oftentimes.
So speaking of, we know that antibiotics cause a lot of upset in that microbiome, right? And you said at the in the opening that 40 to 50% of our immune system comes from our gut health. So the question I have is, and it's personal for me, because my youngest daughter has been on antibiotics off and on over the last few months. It's just been a brutal winter. And she had bronchitis and then she had strep. And, you know,
but you also have to put her on because you have to shut down anything because of Grace. Her middle daughter has
shut
lymphoma.
It down.
Okay.
So she's been immune compromised. So I always have to like put her on an antibiotic. My question is, how can you is there anything you can avoid if you do have to take antibiotics to counterbalance what you're, because essentially you're healing yourself, but you're also, it sounds like, kind of, pardon my French, but fucking your biome in there and making your immune system weaker. Yeah. So it sort of feels like once you get into that sort of hamster wheel, it's hard to get off. So what would you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So knowing what a normal gut microbiome looks like, we don't exactly know that. And it's like a fingerprint. It's different for everybody. The antibiotics that we generally take, we try not to give broad spectrum antibiotics as much as we can. So some of them are targeted. For example, if you're treating something with like an antibiotic for the upper GI tract or strep, it might not affect the gut as much as other broad spectrum antibiotics. So trying to keep it as close a spectrum as possible, and then supporting the immune system with the prebiotics that bring the good bacteria back into the gut system. For example, things like yogurt that has live bacteria in it, sauerkraut, things like kimchi, although your daughter probably won't like that much. But, you know, getting things in there that are going to...
Blue chicken.
Yeah. And then maybe even trying a broad spectrum live probiotic in those specific scenarios to try to counter. And also like eating the rainbow, having a lot of different colors. Those are the prebiotics.
She's my worst.
Yeah. I know.
It's
Lily,
tough for kids.
Lily,
it's going to be tougher with
Lily,
kids for sure.
Like looks at you... And it's like, she's a terrorist with her food.
Yeah.
She is so, like, you're like, no, just...
She won't eat for three days.
She can hold you hostage.
Yeah, I get it. Maybe sprinkling things like flaxseed in there where it's tasteless. Like, you won't taste it. She won't, you know, trying different things.
I know. It's real, but I do. You hear that and, you know, but the rainbow is important because you're getting that spectrum of all different kinds of things. And again, not in a can. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not
absolutely,
in a package.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. It's super important.
Definitely.
You guys know how much I love a chunky necklace.
I love jewelry. Well, my latest obsession, you guys are going to be obsessed with. It's called Heart Jewelry. They're a sister-led jewelry brand known for creating totally custom charm jewelry that is luxurious, unique, and long-lasting. Their pieces, what I love about them, they look high quality without the prices. Their charms are plated 100% recycled gold right here in the good old US of A, using the most environmental friendly process possible. Their special HGE plating process means the jewelry resists tarnishing for years. So yes, you're going to get the look of high quality without those prices, and the jewelry will not tarnish for years. It's amazing. You got to take proper care of it, but I'm telling you, you are going to love it. They have over 50 charms. I love the motherhood to luck, manifestation, zodiacs, the letters, the numbers. What's great is that you can make your own. You can choose with a lot of different and fun options. I created a custom heart charm necklace with my kids' initials. I love it so much. I wear it all the time. We all know jewelry is so personable and powerful, so you can choose your chain and charms to tell your own story. You can design your bracelet or necklace on their website with their drag and drop tool. And it's really cool because you can see what you're going to be getting. Or you can be like, you know what? I don't love it or I don't like it, but I love what I'm going to get. And so you can really do this. You can also book a complimentary virtual styling appointment. Okay, all you're going to do is visit shopheart.com, use code LIPSTICK10 at checkout for 10% off your first purchase, free shipping for over $100. That's shopheart.com. That's shopheart.com. Use code LIPSTICK10 for 10% off your first order with free shipping over $100. That's shopheart.com. Use code LIPSTICK10 for 10% off your first order, free shipping over $100. Listen, Heart, they rarely ever offer discounts with their custom jewelry. So this is a very exclusive offer for our listeners. Follow them at ShopHeart on Instagram and TikTok. Spring is in full swing, and what better way to celebrate than with the Macy's Flower Show? Oh, that's right. I love a flower show. I love florals. I love flowers. You heard that right. Macy's annual flower show is here. Now to April 7th, Macy's Herald Square flagship store in New York City will transform into a garden blossoming with thousands of flowers. This immersive experience is truly the most joyous spring activity. It brings the colors, sights of spring to the center stage. You'll feel that you've escaped the hustle and bustle of the city without the travel or the cost. Nothing like a little escapism. I took my kids 1 year and they spent hours getting lost in all the spring blossoms. They couldn't believe this was a real place. A lot of people are asking me where to go. If you go to New York City and you are there until April 7th, you must visit the Macy Flower Show. With Mother's Day just a month away, it's the perfect place for gift shopping. You can pick up unique, exclusive flower show souvenirs. The offer is only during the 2 weeks of the flower show run, and you can shop all other Macy's favorites while surrounded by spring oases. Trust me, it is mesmerizing. If you go this year, you have to check out Dior's takeover of the mezzanine. Okay, I saw the Dior show in Paris. It was incredible. What they have done in Macy's is unbelievably amazing and beautiful. All the new floral displays, as well as the iconic floral fragrances, so you can fully indulge in your senses in Dior. I'm obsessed with the new and reimagined Miss Dior perfume. The fragrance blends floral and fruitiness with notes of amber woods. And I'm telling you, we just had Mary Lee Lawless on Lipstick on the Grim, and she had the best Dior bag you will ever. So when you're there, go up and check the Dior bags and the perfume. You're not gonna miss this. The best part is the Macy's annual flower show is completely free and open to the public during store hours. Learn more at Macy's.com/flower show.
Do you have any probiotics that you like, yeah, that you use, or prebiotics that you recommend?
Yeah, for very narrow scenarios, like patients with diarrhea or with antibiotics and things like that, VSL-3 is one that's been very widely studied. It's a high dose. It's a wide array. It's live. It can survive, through some of the stomach acidity because it's a high dose. So that's one of the go-tos. But one other thing I want to say, we were talking about bloating earlier. I often see patients with bloating treating with probiotics prior to coming to see me. And I find that a lot of times that makes the situation worse. So one of the first things I do when patients are bloated is tell them stop the probiotic, especially if it hasn't worked yet. And I know that's a shocker, but that's one of the first things that we...
My mouth is open. I thought you were actually going to say the exact opposite.
No, it actually can promote bloating.
Why?
Because we don't know exactly what is going on in their gut. What is their biome? And it's an oversimplification to just introduce 10 strains of good bacteria and presume that that's going to resolve the problem. We have to go through that checklist that we talked about before. Some of them will require sort of a reset with an antibiotic that's specific to the gut, that works topically in the gut to reset that. Some of them just aren't getting enough variety in their diet. Some of them have had infections in the past that cause, you know, irritable bowel syndrome or what the holistic docs call leaky gut. So it's case by case. It's really case by case. I think it's oversimplified that probiotics help with everything in the GI tract. They don't.
That's so, that you just debunked that. It's true. That's why we wanted to have you on, because what we think, you're like, I would totally sell, like, start a probiotic, do charcoal. Like, that's just.
And you're making the situation worse.
I get it. Yeah. I think, you know, it's tougher just to eat the variety of things that we should be eating. And you brought up the kid scenario. That makes it, that's a really tough one.
You mentioned acidity. Yeah. I find sometimes when I've been really watching what I eat over the last like few months, and just, you know, summer's coming and get my button gear. Yeah. And I find that if I eat chicken, it almost feels like it is burning a hole in my throat. And like, I've actually bent over my sink and vomited.
What?
And it's just, literally, it's just like, it feels like acid reflux. Is there something with chicken? Is that, have you ever heard this before?
And that only happens with chicken?
Only with chicken.
But you love chicken.
I know. But if I eat a piece of chicken breast, I don't know why, it's only chicken, and it starts to almost feel like it's like burning a hole in my throat coming up.
Then don't eat chicken.
Can't say I've heard that a lot, but I'd agree with Molly on that one. I think it's your body talking to you and probably
don't eat chicken, right?
Shy away from it and maybe run a pregnancy test or something.
Don't eat.
Definitely not pregnant. Had the tubes taken out. But yeah, it's bizarre. And I'm like, it's acid. It's the only time I ever get acid reflux. Yeah.
Can we talk about acid reflux?
Absolutely.
What should we do if we have acid reflux or heartburn?
So the first thing is, don't ignore it. If it's happening frequently, if it's happening often, it shouldn't be, and come to attention. There's some great over-the-counter medications that can reduce stomach acidity. But if you're having to take a lot of them, then that needs to be evaluated as to why. There's ways of preventing it, such as avoiding late meals so that you don't eat and lie flat. Gravity is your friend. It's hard for acid in the stomach to go vertically into the esophagus, but if you eat and lie flat, that can happen. Carbonated drinks, you want to try to stay away from.
Yeah, you know what? Bubbly drinks, should we stay away from them?
Only if you're having, you know, heartburn and frequent heartburn, and that might just be a small part of what's causing your heartburn. Again, I'd like to think of things as like pie charts. It's really easy to ascribe, you know, a condition to one thing, but it's usually not that way. It's multiple things. So maybe drink less of it, see if it helps. If that doesn't help, you know, caffeine is another big one that can lead to heartburn. Fatty foods, oily, greasy foods, you know, steak and wine at night is going to do it, and being preemptive about it. But the most important thing I would say about it is, don't ignore it. If it's happening, come to medical attention. Don't just keep taking meds for it.
When should we see a doctor like you?
I think anytime there's, you know,
issues,
chronic symptoms, right, you know, things that aren't just quickly going away, if they're severe, if you're in severe pain, I wouldn't wait. There are certain GI conditions like appendicitis, diverticulitis, right, that we need to deal with that day. But as a matter of routine for screening, which is screening and cancer prevention, which is a lot of what we do, the US guidelines suggest starting colonoscopy at age 45 or 10 years younger than the diagnosis age of a first degree relative. So let's say, God forbid, dad was, you know, diagnosed at 45 with colon cancer, then you should be screened at 35.
Wait, so Geza was diagnosed with colon cancer.
My dad was diagnosed, it was 13 years ago, almost 13 years ago. So he's 86 now.
He was like 73.
So he was 73.
Yeah. So that.
But I had my first colonoscopy at 40.
Yeah, so that was my next thing, is I'm a huge fan. The U.S. guidelines suggest starting at age 45. It recently dropped from 50 to 45. But we've been seeing a lot of younger patients with colon cancer, and it's completely preventable. We have to draw a line in the sand somewhere. We can't do a colonoscopy screening for every 30-year-old, 35-year-old who walks through the door, because we'd be doing a lot of them for nothing. It starts to make sense for me at 40. I see a lot of precancerous polyps in patients 40 and over. And we can talk about what a polyp is, but we remove it, and that prevents colon cancer. So it's extremely gratifying to be able to do that. Unfortunately, in the U.S., patients between the ages of 50 and 75, only about 2/3 of people who are eligible actually get screened. So 1/3 of people don't get screened.
Why?
At all. I think there's a lot of fear to colonoscopy. We can talk about what actually goes into it. It's a fear of loss of control. It's the thought of what the procedure is, but right. I don't know if You tell me. I've been through two myself. I've had two colonoscopies. You've been through two.
I loved mine. Terrible. I'm just going to throw it out terrible. There. I loved mine.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, no, I love mine too. I mean, once he put me out, I loved it.
Yeah. Like
I felt
you,
great.
You don't feel anything if it's the right type of sedation. It's the prep. It's the night prior. It's the day prior.
I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I didn't. So now, let's just take it back. Walk us through, what is a colonoscopy? What is a polyp? What is the prep? Like, let's just go.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So a polyp is a small growth in the colon. Let's back up for a second. If nobody in the U.S. gets a colonoscopy, 4% of people, one out of every 25 people will develop colon cancer, lifetime risk. So 4% lifetime risk if nobody gets a colonoscopy. It's the third most common cancer in the U.S. behind breast and skin, and it's completely preventable by taking out polyps. So polyps are these growths that happen inside of the colon that are visible, that when we go in there and we see it, we can remove it. And I often get asked, patients get really confused between removal and biopsy. Our goal when we go in there and see a polyp is to remove it entirely. So if there's any precancer cells in there, that they don't have an opportunity to grow. Polyps develop into colon cancer if they're precancerous polyps over the course of, you know, anywhere from typically 5 to 10+ years. So we have a time to detect these, remove them, and completely prevent that. Okay, so that's what a polyp is. That's why it's important to do a colonoscopy so we can prevent them from progressing to cancer. The process of getting ready for a colonoscopy starts maybe 3 days prior, where you go on a low residue diet, no nuts, no seeds, but you can have everything else.
No skin. No, I'm just joking. Yeah. There's no, on the paper it said no skin.
No fruits with skin.
No fruits with skin.
Yeah. We try to get it specific, you know, so we can see everything. And then 24 hours before, you have to go on a clear liquid diet. So that's broth, Jell-O, coffee, tea.
Just so you know, the day before I was here.
Did you cheat?
No, I did not ask them. I did not cheat. But it was really hard to fast on clear broth shooting five podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Jell-O kept me alive the day before. Yeah.
Now, what percentage of colonoscopies end up having polyps? Like, how common is it to find a polyp?
Yeah, it's a good question. By age 50, it depends on the age. So the older you get, the more likely you are to get polyps. So by age 50, I'd say about 30% of patients have precancerous polyps.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's common. Not all of those will turn into colon cancer, right, but some of them will. And that's why it's really important for everyone to get screened so that we can remove those. And then that takes the chance, presumably, to as close to zero as possible.
There's no judgment on this question.
Sure.
Do you believe in colonics?
I do not.
You do not?
I strongly do not. No.
Really? What?
And most gastroenterologists
They don't.
Yeah.
Remember Clay's dad? He was a GI too. It was absolutely not.
There's a couple of things, and I want to talk about one of the myths of colonoscopy. Some people are worried about getting an infection during colonoscopy. It's exceedingly rare given the sterilization techniques that we use. I don't know that a lot of these colonic clinics are held to the same standards. So that, you know, we have people coming in who inspect, who license, who we have, you know, I think this machine costs about $400,000. It cleans the scopes over multiple times. And there's a lot of checks and balances that I don't think the clinics have. Secondly, I'm not 100% of the health benefits of it. And people who do it too much, they get rid of some of the good bacteria in their colon. Undoubtedly, it does help some patients with constipation, but I have other tools in my toolbox to help people with that.
Besides,
and perhaps a safer way.
Right. No, I know. Some of it can be sketchy. Like,
Yeah. I mean, I've done one colonic.
I've done a lot. I used to go to WeCare, and WeCare is very clean, very, you know, I love going there, but I mean, I don't love going. No one loves going there, but I try to go there for a clean bath. So they're not that beneficial.
The data on it is not very convincing that it's.
I mean, you could probably helpful. Just do an enema.
I think a colonic probably does more than an enema, but I think there's just other ways to get you to where you want to be.
Or you could just do the colonoscopy prep and you're off.
Yeah, just do a colonoscopy, guys. It's the
or
same
you
thing.
Do a colonoscopy
I
prep.
Do.
Okay, so
I do have a question though, because I think that one of the things that I wish I would have remembered and written it down, but I didn't know we were doing this podcast when it was up. A couple of weeks ago or months ago, the Today Show did a whole thing about how there's been a huge rise in patients between 30s in their 30s and 40s, an increase in colon cancer. And I know I have heard of women around my age, I'm 45, that have unfortunately found themselves at very late stage colon cancer. Why do you think, because to your point earlier, we are living healthier lives, we are doing the right thing. So what do you think is contributing to such a dramatic increase in diagnosing this specific cancer?
Yeah, I really wish we knew the exact answer to that. I have some presumptions, but they're presumptions at best. The first thought I had when that was coming out in the news and I was seeing it in my own practice was, could it be due to obesity? Because the obesity epidemic in the U.S., and it wasn't. We were seeing normal BMIs, and that didn't change much. I wonder if it's a lot of the processed foods maybe that we had. Certainly, I think our stress and work lives are different. Our sleep patterns are different. I have my own question marks, and again, this is very presumptive, about plastics in our water.
Well, that's who we talk about. Dr. Geller, who you guys sent me to, like, he will tell you, do not drink out of plastic bottles.
I would agree with that. You know, there was a period of time where we didn't know smoking was bad. And I think in 20 years, we'll be able to answer that question. But sadly, right now, we're just trying to do our best to prevent and catch things early.
How do you approach educating your patients about their gastro issues and dispelling misinformation?
Yeah, I always have to stick to the belief that I think patients know their bodies well. And if they're really convinced about something, I don't have to take them down my path. I can just tell them that this is my path and maybe it'll work for you, maybe it doesn't. But there is a lot of misinformation. I think there's a lot of marketing that goes into GI products. We talked about probiotics being the kind of cure-all that maybe they're not. I think it's important to listen to why they believe that, what their concerns are. Are they worried about winding up on antibiotics, on a medication? Is there a better way of dealing with it? Where did they get the information? And then just kind of telling them what the data shows. The data doesn't have everything. That's been proven to me time and time again. Science doesn't prove everything, but trying to understand why they came to that conclusion. Like, for example, if somebody really wanted a colonic and was adamant about getting it, it's my job just to tell them, these are the things that I'm concerned about. You can make a decision and make sure you go to a reputable place.
Right.
And that's the approach that I take and eventually try to make a team effort to try to get them to where they want to be.
Is there a difference in starting to think about getting a colonoscopy for a man or a woman?
Not at all.
There's no difference.
No, it's exactly the same. I think if there's no risk factors, starting to think about it at 40, definitely by 45, it should be done, but no difference.
Okay. How often should you get one?
It sort of depends on what we find. And again, this goes to guidelines. So let's say somebody had a normal colonoscopy at the age of 40 or 45. Guidelines would say, let's do it again in 10 years. A lot of people would argue with me on this point, but I'm a believer that I think the progression from polyp to colon cancer might be a little bit quicker than what we once thought. The data on that, I think, is behind. And in patients' formative years, in their good years, probably pushing it to 5 to 7 maximum if everything's normal. Now, if there's polyps, depending on the size, the type, the type of precancerous polyp that's there, we might shorten that interval even further. There's people where I do a colonoscopy and I have to go back in 6 months or a year or 3 years. And it's really important not just to do it, but understand what the findings were. And the gastroenterologist should really take the time to explain what the patient had and why they need the follow-up when they need it.
I asked Ari if I could come in before 5 years.
I get asked that often. I get patients who are so worried about it that they want to come in every year. And I have to pump the brakes on that too, because, you know,
I said
there's
three.
There's risk reward.
Well, you also mentioned, when I asked the question about colon cancer, you mentioned stress as something. Yeah. And I am curious as to the correlation between stress and a lot of, you know, inflammatory diseases like colitis, for example. How does stress play in triggering things within the immune system?
Yeah, it certainly weakens the immune system. I don't know that we know the exact answer to that, but I've seen it time and time again where patients come to me with pretty significant symptoms, and it really highly correlates with what they're going through and the timing of it. And the other thing is, it's not always one-to-one. It's not stress today and a gut problem today. It could be you had a horrible last month, you know, it's been a rough couple of years and now it's acting out. That does happen. Cortisol, the immune system, you know, we don't know if there's a change in the gut microbiome that happens. That's something I'm really excited about, hopefully advancing in our field. We're not really good at measuring the gut microbiome, but I can assure you that it probably changes during times of stress. And how do we counter that? What is even a good microbiome that we can then introduce good stuff in? So,
kind of like what immunotherapy does, it pumps up your immune system to help your immune system work better.
Absolutely.
Pumping in more microbiome that can help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What about an endoscopy? What is it and when do we need one?
Yeah. So an endoscopy is just doing a procedure where we look at an inside, but an upper endoscopy, also known as an EGD, is looking in the esophagus, the stomach, the very first part of the small intestine. In certain countries like Japan and Korea, where stomach cancer and esophageal cancer incidence are really high, everybody gets screening as a routine, like we were talking about colonoscopy here. But in the U.S., we thankfully, it's not such a high incidence, and we do it if patients have severe symptoms, such as chronic heartburn, stomach pain that's not getting better. We listen for alarm symptoms like weight loss or nausea or vomiting that's not going away, you know, dark stools, blood in the stools, vomiting, things of that nature. Again, wouldn't ignore those symptoms and come to attention. An upper endoscopy doesn't have a preparation. It's just nothing to eat for about 8 hours prior to the procedure. And it's done under sedation, as is colonoscopy. You don't feel anything. And we have the ability to look on the inside and look around, make sure everything's fine, and take some biopsies, which you don't feel. Some samples to try to figure out what's going on.
I had an endoscopy. Remember when I had giardia and they couldn't figure out what it was?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I went as far as to have an endoscopy.
Yeah, like a GI textbook.
No, all they had to do was ask me if I'd gone out of the country. I'm like, yes, I have.
Did you guys know that hair thinning will happen to approximately 1 in 2 women? If you're among them, you know you're not alone. In fact, I know the struggle firsthand. Hair thinning is totally normal, but it's not openly talked about. Going through it can feel really lonely and frustrating. If you're struggling like I was, join over 1 million, that's right, 1 million people that are doing something about it. It's called Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeking thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Okay, I know you guys know this, but after having kids, my hair, it totally changed. And Nutrafol is the first supplement I've taken where I've seen actual results. Everyone's hair journey is different. The causes for hair issues, they really differ. That is why their wellness quiz on their site, Nutrafol.com, for a personalized hair health plan is so good, because it gets to the base of your specific root cause. Taking your hair care into your own hands has never been easier. You can purchase online, no prescription required, free shipping, automated deliveries to ensure you never miss a day. It's physician formulated with drug-free ingredients. The supplements support healthy hair growth within by targeting root causes of thinning. And there are a lot of causes. Think stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, metabolism, as they evolve throughout a woman's life. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. You guys, for a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code LIPSTICK. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. It's Nutrafol.com. Make sure and use promo code LIPSTICK to get 10% off your first order. That's Nutrafol, promo code LIPSTICK. Spring break is finally here, and one of my favorite things to do before leaving for a trip is stock up on a new fragrance. Oh, that's right. You guys, I love it. And my latest obsession is Vacation Sun Care fragrances. Vacation by Vacation, that's right. After Sun by Vacation are two luxury summer fragrances from Vacation, makers of the world's best-smelling sunscreen. Okay, this fragrance duo is truly the perfect combination to transport you from day to night while on holiday or whenever you want to relive your cherished summertime memories. The Vacation Eau de Toilette embodies the iconic scent of the Vacation brand sunscreen. It has blends of coconut, banana, pineapple with nostalgic hints of pool water, swimsuit lycra. It's the best smell. Can't you just picture salt water in your hair, sand between your toes, sun in your skin? Their signature fragrance captures the essence of lazy days by the pool and peak summer moments. By the way, Vogue and Pop Sugars wholeheartedly agree. Plus, Vacation has garnered, that's right, millions of views on TikTok and has been featured in over 150 articles. It has even become a top seller both online and in stores. So the other fragrance from them that I love is After Sun, Eau de Toilette, which was inspired by the illustrious Vacation brand After Sun Gel, which, by the way, is an incredible product. If you've got too much sun or you've sunburned, it's so good. It's so refreshing. It combines the soothing essence of aloe vera, green tea, cucumber. It's kind of reminiscent of a cool afternoon showers or cocktail hour soirees. Both fragrances are genderless and crafted by master perfumers who are behind Clinique Happy. If you know, You know, for a limited time, listeners of the podcast get 20% off their entire order. That's a lot, guys. Make sure and use code LIPSTICK at vacation.inc. That's VACATION.inc.
What is Barrett's esophagus and how do we survey or treat it to prevent esophageal cancer?
Yeah. So Barrett's esophagus is a precancerous phase to esophageal cancer. So if you think of the esophagus cells as being normal and then esophagus cancer being the end of that spectrum, in between is Barrett's esophagus, where the cells of the esophagus look like small intestine cells. And we can detect that. And if there's precancerous changes there, we can treat it to prevent it from progressing. Most people with Barrett's do not have precancerous changes, and we put them on a surveillance protocol. We look at that area, biopsy, and then if things change and get worse, then we treat it to prevent progression.
Are there any emerging treatments you're excited about within gastro?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the most exciting is trying to figure out how we can really test the gut microbiome. Right now, a lot of the commercial tests that are available out there are only looking at the biome in the colon. We have biome in our small intestine, in our stomach, in our esophagus, in our mouth, and we're not really good at figuring out what it is and how to change that to make things better. We're on the cusp of that, I think.
Red meat. How many times a week or not at all?
It's generally thought to be the enemy of the colon. Yeah. I think that it also depends, you know, the type. I think it's important to have things that are, you know, without hormones and whatnot. But the dogma is generally the less omega-6 fatty acids, which are found in red meat, and the more omega-3 fatty acids, which are found in like salmon and trout, the better off you are, the less inflammatory it is.
Do you want us to eat salmon?
Yes, I prefer wild-caught to farm-raised, but yes, because they're eating completely different things.
What's the difference between heartburn and acid reflux? This is a question I always have. I never know.
Yeah, it's a good question. They're the exact same thing. Heartburn,
acid
reflux.
That's the same thing.
And one more I'll throw in that bag is gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD. All three are the same thing. What they're describing is the stomach acid coming up into the esophagus where it doesn't belong. And all three are describing the exact same thing.
And is it bad if you have it? Like, is it a sign of something else?
Everybody gets it here or there because the mechanisms to protect the acid from coming up, the stomach is a really acidic environment, are not perfect. So everybody gets it. But when you're getting it chronically and frequently, or if there's difficulty swallowing, you know, but the most important thing is happening often, you really should get it checked out and not just take over-the-counter stuff to treat it.
Palomas. Yeah. I had to stop.
Palomas.
Because the grapefruit, with the alcohol. I swear to God, I think I gave myself like a gastric problem that you had to take care of, but I never told you it was Palomas.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
It's okay.
That makes sense.
Don't worry. Okay. We want to list off a handful of different issues, diseases and disorders. Can you walk us through some of the symptoms to look out for and what you'd recommend to get some of these under control? We talked about bloating.
Yeah.
Can you do anything for IBS?
Absolutely. So IBS is a brain-gut connection, very serotonin-dependent, which is the neural hormone in our brain that everybody's familiar with for depression, anxiety, but that's also, there's a lot of serotonin receptors in the gut. Not all IBS is related to stress, anxiety. Some of it is post-infectious, like somebody had an infection and then can develop either IBS with diarrhea or IBS with constipation or mixed. There's definitely treatments for it. There's a lot of things that can help diminish the symptoms. Right. And there's even things that you take and it could significantly abate or resolve the symptoms. So yes.
Heartburn and acid reflux.
Yeah, we went through a list of the things to prevent. The medications that we have for that are phenomenal. And I find that all too often patients are probably worried and afraid of taking those and sort of live with acid reflux. But what's important to recognize is having chronic acid exposure in the esophagus is also a bad thing.
Right.
So, you know, we have to find ways of preventing it and hopefully with the least amount of medication possible.
Gallstones.
Gallstones are when you
get... What are gallstones?
Gallstones, so the gallbladder sits right by the liver on your right upper side. And they're when you get saturation, typically of cholesterol. There's other types of gallstones, but it's typically cholesterol that saturates. It doesn't have anything to do with your cholesterol level. And they form solid stones, as the name implies. And they can get caught up in these small bile ducts there, causing a lot of pain.
I never knew what a gallstone was.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, colitis. My mother, right before Remember,
yeah.
I mean, they missed it, but You found it. Literally, like, I can't get into that. I'll start crying. But
sweet lady.
She's the best. She was patient of Dr. Ari's as well. Colitis.
Colitis just implies inflammation of the colon. That could be from anything. There's a lot of things that cause it. There's ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, which are autoimmune conditions. There's infectious colitis, where you get a bug and and you develop symptoms from that. There's ischemic colitis, not getting enough blood flow to the colon. So it's just inflammation of the colon.
Well, the colon has a lot going on. Listen, the colon has a lot going on.
It's really an underappreciated organ.
It's an underappreciated organ. Okay. In terms of elimination, if you're like, okay, I'm your patient, how do you start elimination, like an elimination diet? Do you pick certain, will you tell me, you're like, okay, I don't want you to have X, Y, and Z for how long?
Yeah, it sort of depends on what symptom. The most common reason we'd have somebody on an elimination diet would be for bloating. The low FODMAP diet you've probably heard of is essentially a elimination diet where we have you eat the foods that don't cause gassiness, avoid the ones that do, and one at a time reintroduce to see how you feel. So that's one scenario where we use an elimination diet. The other is if we're having symptoms, lactose intolerance or dairy intolerance is extremely common. So it's often that I give the recommendation to kind of avoid dairy for 2 weeks or gluten for a couple weeks and just see how much better the symptoms get.
I'm writing this down. Hold on. Lacto. What you said. Okay. Lacto. And
For bloating, lactose, gluten.
And gluten.
We talked about the low FODMAP diet.
Yeah, the low.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, and it's, my mom passed away from pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's, I'm going to be really dumb right now. Is that in the world of gastrointestinal, or is that considered sort of separate?
It is. No, it's in the world. We are the ones who typically will diagnose it. So we deal with liver, hepatology, gastroenterology and hepatology. So it's liver, gallbladder, pancreas. We deal with a lot of spleen disorders, anything in the abdomen we deal with.
And do you find that there are any triggers in some of these other issues that we just went through, right? So IBS, acid reflux, colitis, any of that. Is there any correlation, or is there anything that would be a red flag to be a precursor to any pancreatic issues, pancreatitis, whatever? Like, it's always top of mind for me.
Yeah.
My mom wasn't diagnosed until she was 66 years old, and she lived for 2.5 years with it. She was able to get the Whipple.
Yeah, she got the Whipple, and she was actually... Mm-hmm. First diagnosed with bile duct, right?
Yeah, they first thought it was in the bile duct, but it ended up being, it was just a blessing that it was where the tumor started because it caused her to jaundice.
Yeah.
But it was early stage still in the sense that they caught it early. I mean, she was still relatively advanced, but what would you say, is there anything that like you would look at this list of things and go, oh, if that happens to you a lot, then like you should go get a...
Or is there a
scan
test
and
you
check
could
your
do,
baseline for your pancreas.
Yeah, sadly, pancreas and you mentioned bile duct cancer are pretty stochastic processes. They're kind of random. There's not a lot of things that you listed in terms of those conditions that can cause it. We do know that if patients, are drinking alcohol heavily, like alcoholics and whatnot, it can increase the risk. But by and large, it's a pretty random process, which makes me excited about some of the newer things that are coming out, like these liquid biopsies that a lot of people are doing. We do it in the office as well, where it's designed to detect things at an earlier stage. Our goal is ultimately, which is what I love about gastroenterology, I remove polyps, I prevent colon cancer from forming. But with pancreas cancer, that's tough to do. And we can, better than ever before, run some blood work potentially that can screen and find things at an earlier stage.
Like with someone like Amisha, her mom dying at, late 60s, would she be eligible for that screening?
Yeah. At anybody, over 18 is eligible. I wouldn't encourage it at 18, but anybody's eligible. And then a question mark as it pertains to pancreas cancer is, should we be imaging via MRI?
I just was going to ask you, Pronova, this whole thing, the whole body MRI.
Yeah, yeah. And there's even more specific than Pronovo to the pancreas. Like, should we be looking at that? There's a lot of research and studies going on about that. I refer patients to some of these studies, but I'm always on the side of knowing more, especially because, you mentioned something that perhaps is going to cause more problems than the pancreas cancer. It's always top of mind for you. Those were your words. And to show you a normal pancreas on an MRI is sort of a big deal. Like, that would put a lot of anxiety to rest, at least for a couple years. So
yeah, I mean, there's two sides to that story. I think that's always my fear is like, if you go looking for it, you find it, but then you find something, then you save your life. So it's like,
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's debatable. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with doctors about this, and it goes down the line 50-50, whether they think, you know, these whole body screenings and preemptive imaging is a good idea or not. You're going to find things that you have to act upon, but then you potentially might also find things that could be life-saving.
Would you compare the markers that you test for, how did they line up or stack up to the MRI? Would you say, you know what, if you're not ready for the MRI, because it's like scary if you find other things, like,
yeah,
you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, it's apples and oranges. It's really hard to compare the two. Yeah. Okay. You know, there's just different modalities.
Is there gene testing for pancreatic?
Yes, but a majority is not genetic in nature.
It's not genetic in nature.
Not germline, like not inherited genes.
Right.
All cancers are genetic in the sense that they change the DNA at some point, but they're not inherited for the most part, at least for pancreatic.
Right.
I think unless you're Ashkenazi, right? There's like I believe that's what my mom's doctor had told me. She asked us if there was Ashkenazi in our history, our family, definitely in our bloodline.
There's definitely a few genetic hereditary pancreatic cancer, but most are not.
Yeah.
Do you love what you do?
I do.
I know.
I do. It's fun.
He's always happy. He's happy when I'm literally like bawling. I'm like passing out. My blood pressure is like 20. I think that's why you're so good. Like I'm in Anne Hale. Like you're very good at making, because when we're coming to see you, we're nervous.
Absolutely.
Maybe not Holly. We're just like, what can you do for us? But
Holly, we're excited about.
Exactly.
A walkout looking fabulous.
Yeah. We're like, or we know in like a week or two, my microneedling. But I think finding a doctor that is good with you, like Hakaka and Baker, Nguyen, Roddy.
It's a relationship.
It's a relationship, but also how they speak to you, right? Like, I had to do this scan the other day and Emma, she was like, will you pin Dr. Hukaka's thing? She's like, don't worry. It's just monitoring a cyst. But it's how she was like, nothing to worry about. You know what I mean? Or you need to worry, right? Or this is the moment where we're going to like figure it out.
Yeah. And it's normal to be worried about these things. I went for two colonoscopies and both times I was in that gurney and I was nervous and I've done
isn't it weird getting a colonoscopy even though you're like, who'd you use?
I went to one of my colleagues, you know. I went to the second best guy in town.
Yeah, exactly.
Second best guy. A subpar colonoscopy you got?
No. He's wonderful.
I know. But it is like we talk about all the times because she's having to go through so many scans and not scans so much now for Grace, but constant blood work. And it makes you crazy.
It's unnerving. But the other flip side of it is we're privileged. We're in a time that we have these things. You know, there was a time where everybody was in stage four. We have to talk about the wins where we do catch things early. And prevention, you don't even know when you're preventing something. Doing all these things that we're doing that are good for us, we'll never know if it helped or not. But
do you also think people are getting diagnosed more early just because of technology?
There is a factor of that, for sure. But, you know, I think what we need to get better at is prevention. And that's the ultimate goal.
But people don't get colonoscopies on a regular basis.
There's a lot of fear about it. But after you go through one, as you and I have, you realize it's not the beast that you thought it was. The anesthesia is, you know, it's comfortable. People can conceptualize putting on a seatbelt as preventing things, but colonoscopy is the exact same thing. Mammograms are the exact same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do agree with you, earlier the better, not waiting till 50.
Yeah. Yeah. But we need to get better in medicine. We need to learn how to prevent. That's going to be the long-term goal.
Yeah, I think that it's a bigger conversation too with like insurance, right? Because I think that's the part where so many people in this country, unfortunately, insurance doesn't want to pay, right? And I think that's where hopefully we'll get to a place, you know, where it's democratic for all to get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We should have that right.
Yeah. You know, even here in LA, I trained at LA County USC Hospital where I learned to do these. And even with someone with no insurance, that's available to them. So thankfully we have the means and resources to get everybody screened. It's just a matter of willingness.
You're amazing. We do a little rapid fire here on Lipstick on the Rim. I'm sure Holly told you. Best thing about being married to a derm?
She's beautiful.
She's so beautiful.
Keep me beautiful. Free Botox for life.
She's so good. And I always tell people who like are scared to go, I'm like, trust me, she looks like you. She looks like her. She doesn't look like.
No, she's gorgeous. What's your favorite late night snack as a GI?
So this is going to bore you because I'm a health freak like that. So cottage cheese.
And I love cottage cheese.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay. What TV show are you currently binging?
We're watching Griselda.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's with, what's your face?
Sophia Vergara.
Sophia Vergara. Yeah, love her. Great. She's so good. Morning or night? Are you a morning person or a night person?
Morning.
Is Holly a morning or night?
Night.
She's night?
She's definitely night.
Oh, I'm definitely morning.
I'm a morning too. Favorite place you've ever traveled?
In the States, Palmetto Bluffs, South Carolina. That place is fun.
Oh, haven't you gone to Palmetto Bluffs?
No.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I loved it there. That's the first thing that came to mind. It was so much fun.
Okay, go-to cocktail.
Tequila, Añejo, single cube.
Love. Mm. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Most used emoji on your phone?
Or do you use an emoji?
Is it the poop?
No.
Yeah. Is it the poop emoji that you would be like?
Why does everybody go there with me? It's the 100 with two lines underneath it.
The 100. I love that. Are you a texter, a caller, or a FaceTime?
Call, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Call. Guilty pleasure.
Taking a weekday off to go fishing with my son.
Oh, he's the best son. Dustin! What's your superpower?
My superpower is being calm in the storm.
He's so calm in the storm. Like, have you ever gotten, like, really, like, losing your mind?
Yeah, but after the fact. Not during war. After war.
After war.
Yes.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
We love you. We ask every guest before we go, if you could give advice to your 10-year-old self, what would it be?
My 10-year-old self would be, it's going to sound corny, but don't put a limit on it. There is zero limit. And I have a 12-year-old right now. I try to tell him, like, he looks at athletes like now in the Olympics and it seems impossible, or he'll see somebody succeeding in business or in life and he thinks it's impossible. It's completely possible. You just have to surround yourself and
totally
and believe it and keep going forward.
Yeah, we're going to introduce him to Gabby Bernstein, the queen of manifestation. No, we should listen to Brooks. He was talking to Erica, my Pilates woman. She's so nice. And she was like, you know, how's lacrosse going? He's like, good. He's like, I like basketball too. And he's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to choose the NBA.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to choose
the PL. That's the attitude.
And he's like, I don't know. Or create
your own league and start
that. He's like, I don't know. I might just use the money. I'm like, well, I love that you believe in yourself.
There we go.
Okay. Where can we find you? You in LA at Center GI Health. You're at A Nowain, A-N-O-W-A-I-N. Yeah, that's where we can find you, right?
The practice website is going to be CenterGIHealth.
CenterGIHealth.com. You're amazing. If you are in the state of California, I highly suggest you go to Beverly Hills and see Dr. Nowain and Dr. Funkshonda. You can just...
I'm coming in a few weeks. I'll be scheduling a colonoscopy.
I know. She's going to do her colonoscopy with you.
Great. Oh, yeah. Great. Okay, great.
You'll get to know me intimately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll make it easy for you.
By the way, the prep is not bad.
No, we do, and now, we do tablets,
I don't know
too.
About, I enjoyed mine.
We'll give you the tablets. Mine. We can do tablets for you. It's easy.
No, you know what? You know what I didn't like about that part?
What's that?
I just want you to know this.
Yeah, tell me.
It said, like, I was going to do the tablets, and I called your office, and I was like, no, you have to wait, like, a certain amount of time in between each tablet or something.
Sort of not really.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was being literal.
Well, no, that's okay. I mean, you have to get them done within an hour, but patients find that to be a lot easier.
Well, yeah, then
I'll do the tablets. I'll be the guinea pig for the tablets.
We'll have a whole combo.
But I did it at 7 and then at 5:30. I mean, I think I set my alarm at 5:30.
Yeah. It's easier than what
But
you
it was
think.
Really good, though, and easier if you get the stomach flu or food poisoning before you do your colonoscopy, because there's nothing left.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah. You're the best.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Lipstick on the Rim with Molly Sims and my ride or die, Amisha Gormley. We are always so excited to bring you guys along on this journey. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok at Lipstick on the Rim, or my website where we just dive a little bit deeper into my favorite products, trends, and much, much more on mollysims.com. This podcast is a production with Dear Media. A special thanks to my team, Elizabeth Tawfield, Schaefer Carrillo, Ken Orion, and Anna Sessions, and everyone at Dear Media. Don't forget to listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss out on the fun.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.